Chatur.
Four.
Hotram.
Hotram.
Sacrificial fires.
Sacrificial fires.
Karma Shuddham.
Shuddham.
Purification of work.
Purification of work.
Rajanam.
Rajanam.
Of the people in general.
Of the people in general.
Vikshya. After seeing. Bairikam. According to Vedic rites. Yadadhat.
Made into.
Yagya.
Yagya.
Sacrifice.
Sacrifice.
Santatyai. To expand. Vedamekam.
Only one.
Veda.
Chaturvidam.
And four divisions.
Jai. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Jai. Translation. He saw that the sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas were means by which the people's occupation could be purified. And to simplify the process, he divided the one Veda into four in order to expand them among men. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jana Anjana Salakaya Chaksum Nalitanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jaitam Sarito Pangor Mamamanda Mater Gati Matsargasa Patam Bojo Radha Madha Mohana. So we're going to read the purport, but first I just wanted to give us a little context. The first two words of the translation, he saw. So how did he see? Because this seeing is a little different. I'm just going to read the verse before, or at least the first part of the verse, because that was last week and a lot's happened in between then. That was on Friday, we had Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So the great sage, who is fully equipped in knowledge, could see through his transcendental vision. So that point we just want to kind of keep in mind, that we see, or maybe we don't see, but that's going to be one of the themes of today's class. Because we understand he's a trikalagya, which means he sees past, present, and future. And we generally see the past a little bit. The future is a big mystery. And actually the present, we could just have a discussion of what we're actually seeing about the present also, how accurate that is. So he had a transcendental vision. So here's the purport. Formerly there was only the Veda of the name Yajur, and the four divisions of sacrifice were there specifically mentioned. But to make them more easily performable, the Vedas were divided into four divisions of sacrifice just to purify the occupational service of the four orders. So there's a purpose we're looking to see. So that the subject point is the Vedas, and there was one, but now he's divided into four. And why did he do it? To make them easily performable. Like for instance, since most of the students here today are in school, when you have something to do, if the teacher makes it easy or makes it hard, which one do you prefer? Easy. We like it. Just make it easy to understand and easy to do. So the same way, he could see that the new class that's coming in is going to have trouble understanding the way we did it before. We're going to have to modify it so they can understand, and that's his purpose. And then, of course, what's the purpose? Well, that's going to be the purpose of doing these occupations. So there's a lot of depth to the topics that we're discussing today from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. So just to purify the occupational service of the four orders. So, of course, we know what's occupational service. We can look at occupation in a couple different ways. One is the general way is it's what your means of livelihood is. That's the general accepted understanding. And then another one is how you occupy your time. You do something with your time. How do you occupy your time? What would you like to do? And then will that work? So you have a nature, everyone, particular body that we're born with, even though we're spirit soul, we're born into a body in the material world, which is a problem. It's called janma, mrityu jara vyadhi. And this is an item of knowledge, is to see that this is a problem. And by doing your occupational duty, the sages want you to become purified along with everything else you're doing. And if you don't become purified by your occupational duty, then it's simply a waste of time. Time, durlabha manasa janma. In the human form of life, you have responsibility. You have to be able to respond to the good fortune of having a human form of life. So I'm going to try to read some more. Above the four Vedas, namely Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva, there are the Puranas and the Mahabharata and Samhitas, etc., which are known as the fifth Veda. So that's general knowledge that we should just categorize. Okay, that's something that you're just supposed to know. Srila Vyasadeva and his disciples were all historical personalities, and they were very kind and sympathetic towards the fallen souls of this age of Kali. So fallen souls, what does that mean? What's wrong with a soul? How can a soul be fallen or not fallen? What do you think? Fallen means we just don't have much interest in spiritual life. That pretty much sums it up. That if there's something else to do that'll distract us, we're more attracted to do that. So that's considered an unfortunate situation because your time is running out. Chanakya Pandit mentions, the Prabhupada quotes it, that you can't buy back 1 second of lost time. And in this human form of life, we think we've got so much time, especially when you're young. You think, I got so much time. And Prabhupada would be asked, he says, you have so many young people in your movement. Generally, people don't take the spiritual life till they're real old. Prabhupada answered that a couple different ways. One, old people don't take the spiritual life either. It's just a way of putting it off. And the other way is that what the definition of old is, someone who can die at any time. And we see that all of a sudden, we saw so-and-so yesterday, he's gone today. You can die at any time. But that's not limited to old people. Young people also can die at any time. So in this way, he tries to instill in us an urgency. There's an urgency about spiritual life that comes if you have good association. You can develop that urgency of understanding how important spiritual life is and how time shouldn't be wasted. Okay, so we were just talking about that the sages were very kind and sympathetic, having sympathy for the fallen souls of this age. As such, the Puranas and the Mahabharata were made from revealed, related historical facts which explain the teachings of the four Vedas. There is no point in doubting the authority of the Puranas, the Mahabharata, as part of and parcels of the Vedas. So if Prabhupada puts that in there, it's because most people do doubt it. But he's trying to point that out. There's no point in doubting it. It won't be of any value. So don't waste your time. So many of these instructions are essential for controlling the mind. If one doesn't lets the mind do whatever it wants, that's the same as an animal. So in a human form of life, the responsibility, again, is to learn how to control the mind, which it's not really that easy to do. You can't do it. And it's, well, there's a couple things just to point out. For instance, sometimes you'll see somebody walking their dog and they have a leash on their dog. So are they controlling the dog with the leash? Yes. But is the dog different than every time he sees a fire hydrant or if he sees a squirrel run across the road or anything he sees, he still runs after it. However, he gets stopped because the leash yanks on his throat to stop him from moving. So controlling the mind doesn't mean that all of a sudden the mind is well behaved. No, it means that it has a leash on it that's being controlled. And we're all extremely fortunate because we have the master, the spiritual master, who gives us instructions, the leash. Sometimes it's, if you're a little bit intense, you may say you're on a short leash. If you notice when people walk their dogs, they have different length of a leash. Some of them are 2 feet, 3 feet, some of them are 12 feet. So the 12-foot one, he can get tangled up around a tree, he can run away and then get yanked really hard when he gets to the end of his leash. And the short one, he's right by the heel. That's a command that they use, stay right at my foot. So we always pray to stay fixed at the lotus feet of our spiritual master. In that way, the mind that's going to be attracted all the time to nonsense in this world can keep us from getting into trouble. Like if that leash broke and the dog was running after something and the leash broke, it would cause some disturbance for sure. Especially if it's running after something that's going to be injured. All right, so there's no point in doubting. In the Chandogya Upanishad 7.1.14, the Puranas and the Mahabharata, generally known as histories, are mentioned as the fifth Veda. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, that is the way of ascertaining the respective values of the revealed scriptures. So if there's any question or comment about this verse, we can handle it now. If not, we'll go on to the next verse. Somehow or other, I thought that would be the case, generally. But if we're actively participating and trying to understand what these verses are saying to us, sometimes it'll generate a curiosity. My mother always told me that it's good to ask questions. Tato Brahma Jignas. All right, so now we'll do text number 20. We'll just read it all together.
Rikya ju sam atar vakya virashat varapu vitaha itihasa puranam cha panchamo viravuchyate.
The four divisions of the original sources of knowledge, the Vedas, were made separately. But the historical facts and authentic stories mentioned in the Puranas are called the fifth Veda. So we've already said that this is the general knowledge that we're to just understand, that the knowledge comes from the Vedas, and they're divided now for easily helping us perform our occupation. And we can remember them. There's a verse 1, 2, 13, some siddhi haritoshnam, that all your occupational duties ultimately are perfect. What's the perfection of doing your occupational duty is that you can please Krishna. When Krishna is pleased by your service, then you know that it's perfect. So it's not that all the technical parts have to be there, but the service attitude, that's actually the qualifying factor. Even in chanting Hare Krishna, you can pronounce the words, you can hear the words, you can say it with your mind perfectly still, but the service attitude is what causes the Maha Mantra to manifest, to us. We cannot approach transcendence with the mundane senses. But if you have the service attitude to the spiritual master, then Krishna becomes attracted to manifest to you. All right. So should we go to the next verse then?
I have a comment.
Oh, yes, sir.
On the mind.
Oh,
you mentioned the mind. In the 11th canto, in the story of the Avanti Brahmana, this is, the Brahmana said, "These people are not the cause of my happiness and distress, neither are the demigods, my own body, the planets, my past work or time. Rather, it is the mind alone that causes happiness and distress and perpetuates the rotation of material life." So it's really important to control the mind.
Well, and the idea that I was pointing out with the dog on the leash is not that the mind changes. It's still going to bark. It's still going to have its propaganda. But there's something superior to the mind that that recognizes that this is the mind only. And it's like one time, in a joking way, I'm asking my mind, well, it wasn't a joke when I started. I said, "My dear mind, when will you just give me good instructions and not be such a deterrent to my spiritual life?" And the mind responded, "Oh, you must be thinking of the intelligence. That's next door. This is what I do." So I kind of recognize that there's more than one articulation internally. Your mind, you have your intelligence, you have the super soul. There's so many voices, just like we have up on these walls, there's two big speakers. And all the sound comes through these speakers, but who's got the microphone? You had the microphone, so your voice is coming through the speaker. I have the microphone, my voice is coming through the speaker. So internally, there's the mind, and then there's also the intelligence. So when I ask my mind to please be helpful, it more or less said that I was thinking of the intelligence, and that was next to the mind.
Well, this is two verses later. "All the senses have been under the control of the mind since time immemorial, and the mind himself never comes under the sway of any other. He's stronger than the strongest, and his godlike power is fearsome. Therefore, anyone who can bring the mind into control becomes the master of all the senses."
And then, thank you for that. Those are wonderful comments. One time, a devotee asked Prabhupada, "I have trouble controlling my mind when I chant Hare Krishna." Imagine that. So Prabhupada's answer was, when you're chanting Hare Krishna, you are controlling the mind. So it's not that the dog changes into a human because you have a leash on it. The dog is always the dog, but it's being controlled by the leash. So that's our intelligence. So when the mind, it comes up with its propaganda for material sense enjoyment, because it's the spokesman for the senses and for the for the false ego. So when it presents its propaganda, the intelligence is supposed to be strong enough to say, "I'm going to reject that now because I have better understanding that this occupation of following the mind is called sense gratification. And it's under a category of called karma, the bodily conception of life, birth and death. And it gives you a chance actually to say, to think how much you've actually recognized and remember in Krishna consciousness and what is your degree of surrender at this particular time. And if you do, very quickly, you can make advancement. I have some more comments on that, but because of the time situation, we were supposed to end earlier and start earlier, I have to get through these five verses with purports. So do you want to read the next one too?
All together now.
Yes, sir.
Tatra glida dara paila samago jaimini kovihi vai sampayana evaiko nishnata jasanga.
Which verse was that? Thank you. After the Vedas were divided into four divisions, Pali, Rishi became the professor of the Rig Veda. Jamini, the professor of the Sama Veda. Vaishama Prayam, along. Thank you. Alone became glorified by the Yajur Vedas. The different Vedas are entrusted to different learned scholars for the development in various ways. So just like sometimes we have different devotees that excel in different things, and they're given the assignments that fit their expertise. So 22.
Ataravanga is samashik shumantu dano nomni iti hasa parananam titame ramahashanam.
Maybe you can also read the names along with me on this. We're going to read it anyway. The Sumantu Muni, who was very devotedly engaged, was entrusted with the Atharva Veda, and his father, Roma Harshana, was entrusted with the Puranas and historical records. Okay, purport. In the Shruti mantras, also it is stated that Angiri Muni, who strictly followed the rigid principles of the Atharva Veda, was the leader of the followers of the Atharva Veda. And
23.
All these learned scholars, in their turn, rendered their entrusted Vedas into their many disciples, grand disciples and great grand disciples, and thus the respective branches of the followers of the Vedas came into being. Purport, the original source of knowledge, the original source of knowledge is the Vedas. That's quite fascinating, that there's a source, original source of where knowledge comes from. We take knowledge for granted, especially in school, because there's so much of it being given to us every day. But if they sometimes have survival, well, thank you very much for coming. I hope I said something that had some relevance in your life for purification of your occupation. How you're occupying your time.
Are the Vedas related to the different varnas or not? They said the four occupations. Do they mean that?
Maybe, Pran, do you know the answer to that? Are the Vedas, there's four Vedas and there's four varnas, and it mentions occupation. Is there any correlation between the ashrams? It's the ashrams, not the... Could you mention it again? Oh, maybe give them the microphone.
You can hear the whole description in Shesha Prabhu's class. Like Upanishad is for the sannyasis, like this. But...
How about the occupations?
Just the varna? I'll send you.
Thank you. So just like when you're in school, you're overwhelmed with so much information. But if you were in, let's say, a survival situation, and you were born into that survival situation, you would be so much just dependent on your instincts. But there's a little story I could tell. At one time when I was working, I was in charge of hiring people and firing people. And the hiring people, we would start them at a lower salary. So one of the people being hired, he says, "Why are you starting me at a lower salary? I want the big salary." So I said, "Well, I asked him a question. What's the difference between someone who's experienced and someone who's not experienced? Anybody have any idea what's the difference between those two? Right. Was also they spun an egg, right? How to spin an egg, you can't. So what the answer that I was looking for, that I used in this situation, was mistakes. Someone who's inexperienced, he hasn't made many mistakes. And the one who's experienced, he's learned by his mistakes. So I said, we can give you a choice. We'll start you at the high salary, but every mistake that you make, you have to pay for it. Or the company will start you at the lower price until we see you're not making any more mistakes, and we'll cover the mistakes until then. You know which one he took? He says, I'll start with the lower salary, because mistakes are costly. And what you do in teaching is you understand what mistakes people are going to make. And naturally, if you're a teacher or have affection for anyone, because teaching's in a mode of goodness, you say, oh, don't do that. That would come out like this. You have to add the ingredients when they're all cold. Otherwise, if they're hot or room temperature, it won't, you know, there's all the different elements that no one can ever tell you. Unless someone does tell you, you're just naturally going to make a mistake. Like I have this one picture I can show, maybe we could put it up, how our senses are imperfect. So if you look at this here, this is called an optical illusion. Even though it's two dimensions, two dimensions, it looks like there's depth to it. I put up on the screen here. Called an optical illusion. And actually, in Carnapore discovered that you can change if it goes in or if it goes out. There's actually, if you look at it, it looks like a hole. So that, I was going to try to get that in with the kids here, but it didn't work. it's not hard to make mistakes when you get your information from the senses. So, thank you. So Srila Prabhupada, he pointed out that conditioned souls have four defects. It's a defect, it's just built improperly. Well, not improperly, but it's built with these defects, conditioned souls. The senses are imperfect. You can't get real knowledge from them. So therefore the Vedas, what's the source of the Vedas? Who took a breath about that one? The Vedas emanate from the breathing of Vishnu. They're actually perfect knowledge in this imperfect world. So when one realizes that, yes, Yasha Devi Prabhaktir, Yasha Guru. Thank you. I got the first part. Acharya Van Purusho Veda. If you have an Acharya, then you know things as they are. And if you have faith in the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then everything can be revealed to you. So this is revealed knowledge. And other than that, we have knowledge that comes through the bodily conception of life. And in that situation, that's what needs to be purified. That's what the Vedas are to do. They're to purify us of the bodily conception of life. We use that term quite often, but what does it mean, the bodily conception of life? Sometimes you could define things by synonyms, by something similar to it. So what's a synonym for the bodily conception of life? Who can think of one? Ahankar. False ego. identifying with the bodily conception of life. But what is the, well, we could do a 11:2:37. That's the Abhayam verse. Abhayam, fear. When he becomes Krishna's competitor. If you look at the translation in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and in the word for word in the verse itself. So, sense gratification. The body is basically made up of senses. You see through your eyes, apparently, and you hear through your ears. So we have our senses. And what do the senses see or hear or smell? Is the sense objects. And when you put that all together and identify with it, that's the bodily conception of life. However, that for one who is identified with this body, then he takes birth and then he also dies. But the sober person, he's not bewildered by this change. He can understand he's different from this body. And how does it play out that he's different from his body? Is that he does devotional service. Devotional service is not under the influence of the hankar, it's under the influence of the internal potency through this disciplic succession coming directly from Krishna through the spiritual master. And there's a nice point that I was going to make, two points. So it says, as for protecting the body or abiding by the rules of society and state, there are certain activities, even for the devotees, in connection with conditional life. Okay, here's, I started after the sentence, I wonder. When a living entity is conditioned, he has two kinds of activities. Okay, so most of us are still conditioned. And what are the two kinds of activities? One is conditional, and the other is constitutional. Okay, so the constitutional means doing devotional service. You're actually doing things in your eternal condition. And the other one is you're doing things for the maintenance of your body. You're conditional. You have a job, you work, but besides that, you also have to be responsible in your constitutional position. And later on in the purport, Prabhupada makes this one sentence. He says, as far as possible, a devotee is very cautious so not to do anything that would disrupt his wholesome condition of doing devotional service. He knows that perfection in his activities depends on progressive realization in Krishna consciousness. So this, everything depends on progressive realization. So it's a very important point to make, just like we had initiation the other day, and it always reminds me of whenever there was a Harinam initiation, the initiation lecture used to always talk about the 10 offenses. Because it says if you're not actively trying to give up the 10 offenses, it's offensive. You actually have to be actively trying to know what they are and be working on giving them up. Otherwise, there's a condition called niyamagraha that comes in and more or less you don't notice. You're doing whatever you're doing, but you're doing it, you could say, half-heartedly, and to use it as kind of a pun. You're not fully engaged, so you have to be understanding what it is to achieve. And basically, it's the service attitude, if you want to summarize it very quickly. The service attitude towards the holy name. The service attitude in everything that we're doing. And here, these verses today, they're explaining how he could see past, present, and future because he had transcendental vision. We also can have transcendental vision. 429-69 Bhagavatam mentions that Krishna consciousness means seeing things through the scriptures, seeing things the same way that Krishna sees things. And he says it's not possible all the time because of material desires. The material desires are the contamination, and that's called the bodily conception of life. And they manifest as a blockage, like a cataract in your eye, so you can't see clearly. And one has to not particularly side with the attachments, but know the process for clearing them, just like in the, what's that, 1, 2, 18, right around there, where it mentions how if you develop the urge to hear, which you got by serving the pure devotees, 16, So if you develop, you have faith and you listen, and you develop the urge to hear, then the next verse, 17, so then, because now you develop the urge to hear, you're hearing more, and you get help from the inside. The Paramatma cleanses your heart, and the whole process works by just having that service attitude towards. We know that Prabhupada was very fond, Prabhupada's spiritual master was very fond of books, and he told Prabhupada, if you ever get money, print books. So Prabhupada would sometimes ask his disciples, have you read the books? And then, boy, how would you feel if you hadn't, and Prabhupada had asked you that? He said, no, Prabhupada, just sell them. Well, that's even wonderful. But still, he wanted us to read these books. And do you remember some of the heavier statements? If you don't read all the books translated by the spiritual master, after a certain time, you'll just... Does anybody remember?
Yeah,
eat, sleep, and fall down. So how it is important it is to read these books. And then when you read the books, 116 purport says that even better than after you read it is you explain it to somebody. Shravanam, Kirtanam. He says, because you can actually only assimilate what you've read when you try to explain it. So read it and talk to someone about it. And then Krishna, he likes that. He said, if you explain the secret to the devotees, that you're very dear to me. So I thank you very much for your kind attention. Is there any questions or comments?
Oh. I just have one more verse from the Avanti Brahmana, just in case anybody was thinking that they might trust their mind or listen to their mind. According to Bhagavatam, failing to conquer this irrepressible enemy, the mind, irrepressible enemy, that's your mind, whose urges are intolerable and who torments the heart. Many people are completely bewildered and create useless quarrel with others. Thus, they conclude that other people are either friends, enemies, or parties indifferent to them. So don't pay any attention to the mind. Bhaktisiddhanta said, beat the mind in the morning 100 times. Beat the mind 100 times when you go to bed.
So in the morning, you beat it with a shoe, and in the evening, it's a broom. So just due to my nature, I sometimes think about things. So I said, okay, what do you beat the mind with? It's a nice saying, beat the mind, but let's say take it practically. What's a way to beat the mind with a shoe? What is something that you can do?
Ballet shoe or a big boot with a steel hot nail.
Thank you. Mother Sukhita. Mother, you can give it to Mother Sukhita. She's going to expand on that now, too. Anything that Mother Sukhita says is always for our benefit.
Just that a good way to beat the mind is sadhana. You just regulate. You might not feel like getting up, but you just always just.
You mean you sometimes
it.
You don't feel like getting up? Now, who could be saying that? You think the mind could be saying that? So if you say to your mind, no, I'm going to get up, that's, and that's also rebooting, in the morning when you turn your computer on, it reboots, has to put its defaults back in order. So if you think of the conversation and what actually takes place when you overcome the first thing, and then it comes up with reasons. You got a busy day today, and you have
to. I want to make an announcement that today is a special day because it's Maharani's 94th birthday, if we could get her.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Thank you. May you never take birth again.
I beat my mind with knowledge. When I read, and when the mind comes and, you know, tells me stuff, I say, whoa, that's not written in the books.
Well, one of the other things about controlling the mind is regulation. The mind is whimsical. It does not like to, just like if you remember the dog example with the leash, they don't just like to walk, maybe an old one, but generally they don't like to walk. They want to run this way, and then they see something, they want to run this way, and you're yanking on them. And you watch sometimes, if it's a big dog, they're dragging the one that, actually the dog is the master, and the other one is just being dragged around by him, waiting for, well, that's another thing. Anyway, the point is that the mind probably won't change. Sometimes they get a little bit better, but most of the time you just have to control them. And regulation really is a good way to control the mind. Once, like the dog, after it recognizes that leech, they put choker chains on the dog. So if you, the harder they pull, the more resistance they have. Thank you very much.
Krishna says you need two things, not just...
Oh, what is the two things? Do you have a microphone?
You have to develop detachment also.
Okay, well...
Practice every day is not enough.
So when you're practicing, you're separating yourself from what you want to do. So by that practice, the mind, it's a tug of war, and then gradually one's going to win or the other. So if your regulation wins, then you become separated or detached. And if the detachment wins, attachment works, and it breaks your regulation, that it, you can't stay in the middle. So the detachment is a natural byproduct, isn't it?
But when Krishna said that particularly you have to pay attention,
okay.
We cannot speculate on that. Because Krishna says you need both.
Okay.
That means we have to be willing to discriminate that I don't want to get involved there.
Thank you. So that is the willing part.
I mean, Krishna knows. He created the mind.
Yes, yes. Sir.
Obviously he knows.
Thank you very much. All glories to Prabhupada. How do you go?
Oh, we didn't finish the part.
Oh, you got to remind me sometimes. Oh, my. How do you like that? Huh.
We should finish that stuff.
Oh, should I do it now? All right. After hours, encore. The original source of knowledge is the Vedas. Oh, yeah. There are no branches of knowledge, either mundane or transcendental, which do not belong to the original text of the Vedas. They are simply being developed into different branches. They were originally rendered by the great, respectable, and learned professors. In other words, the Vedic knowledge, broken into different branches by different disciplic successions, has been distributed all over the world. No one, therefore, can claim independent knowledge beyond the Vedas. I was actually going to, that was one of my points.